Tech Show.
The Linux Link Tech Show is
how many people are going to scream?
Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics.
Open links.
From the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away.
Take it away.
Yeah. Linking it up this time without Dan. Dan is off playing with his wife. They're off.
They're planning his escape.
Planning their escape to Virginia, I believe it is.
Flatleaver. Hey, is he on the? Did you check to see if he's on?
No, not yet. He said he would try to be on later, and that we should start up SJ phone. You know,
did you get that
email? We'll do that. We'll do that afterwards.
And I'm supposed to figure out how to do that over here?
Oh, no, I have it. I
sent an email.
Okay.
Alan, read your freaking emails. You never read your
emails. Yes, I do, but the problem is my emails are on another...
Yeah, he reads them a week later. That's what the problem is, right?
No, my emails are on another machine.
Uh-huh.
So I can't get anything here.
No fucking excuse, man. I'm telling you.
No, my emails all go to my desktop.
That is the lamest excuse.
Excuses are like assholes, man. Heard. Everybody's got one.
Yeah.
And they all stink. That's right.
And it's the best I have. Sorry.
Lame. You know, my emails are on a different box, too, but I have, like, a little mail server that I run IMAP on.
Yeah,
you
went professional on it. I just still use the old POP
professional
server.
Professional shit, man.
You use like a professional over there compared to me.
I have a
like
female server.
Professional. Something.
So what's going on this week, fellas?
What's going on this week? Well, I know you're busting to talk about the new Ubuntu stuff. Well, of course, we have our interview tonight.
Yes, with Mark Shuttleworth, which is pre-recorded. We talked to him on Monday. He's a really busy guy, but he did take the time out to talk to us.
Nice guy.
Very cool guy, very down to earth, and he talked for quite a while. And it's really
that one I missed the email completely on.
Nice guy.
The last one I saw on that
Well, you know what? He said he wasn't going to come on if you were going to be on there anyway. So.
Well, it's okay. The last email I saw on that was Dan saying, what the hell's up for this interview?
Right.
And then all I started seeing is like emails saying, oh, is the interview's right here.
I'm on like, point, okay. Man. So like, I talk to whoever, their PR people, their assistants, and it gets worked out.
Yep. Was it good enough? I wish I had... Bennett, you know what? I got over the weekend, the Memorial Day weekend, I got wickedly sunburned around my neck.
Well, that's a stretch. You're like milk white, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, look at that, man. It's freaking it's nasty. Still nasty looking. It doesn't hurt very bad now, but it really, really hurt bad on Monday. And because I follow my kid around. She's in the marching band, right? She did a little parade on Sunday.
She's doing the tuba?
She's doing piccolo right now and tuba next year, I think. But anyway, I followed around and got really, really sunburnt, so I couldn't make it here to Dan's house to do the interview. I really wish I could, because every time I started to say something over the asterisk connection...
A little bit of a lag.
Like, there's so much of a lag that like I'm talking about something that happened, you know, that you guys were done talking about two, three minutes ago.
One thing I did notice, though, when we were talking to Mark, we had none of those problems that we had when we were talking to Bassam last week. I mean, just for the simple fact that we had no stream... You know, going out,
right.
More people listening.
Right.
There was not much going on in REC.
I don't think he called us on a cell phone either, so. I think he called us from a hard line.
You think Bassam was on a cell phone?
I think he was. He's on a cell phone or cordless?
Maybe a cordless. I think he was on a cordless.
I would bet money. And I bet that's, you know, I bet that's a significant contributing factor at any rate.
So, Link, man, are you still having problems with Broad Voice or what?
That's hard to say. I mean, we both were having problems with Broad Voice today.
Today, yeah.
Dialing out. I think they have somewhere along the line there's a relay that's down because, like, you and I can both dial Broad Voice off of our cell phone lines.
Right. We can dial in with the cell phone, but when we try a regular landline,
it just goes nowhere.
Just rings through. I call Broad Voice customer support.
Mine don't even ring through. It's busy.
I just kept ringing.
But you know what? My kid has been on the phone all freaking night long. So apparently it's working somehow for somebody.
You can go out, but you just can't get in.
No, she's been...
Yeah.
They called her.
Now, you got an asterisk server, too, at home, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I got the same thing. Bring your own device. Well, it's not the same service plan. Mine is the all the in-state stuff for $15 a month or something like that. Bring your own device, Asterisk Box, that I haven't upgraded, and, you know, since I set the damn thing up.
Yeah, what I did was I set up the phone, the hard SIP phone that I picked up, the blue budge tone, whatever.
Right.
And I got it working from home, connecting to the server here, which is, you know, like 15 miles away.
Pretty cool.
It works great, you know. I can eat, you know, the message waiting lights up when I have a voicemail, and it's really, really cool. No complaints. I mean, it works. It's cool as hell, man.
It's the shit.
It is.
It's the shit.
Now, what version of Asterisk at Home are you running?
Oh, dude, it's like
from a year ago.
Yeah, it's from a year ago, at least.
The version that we got on this one,
it's probably the same thing.
You can't upgrade that version. The newer versions from like six months
like
ago forward.
Version 2.something. Now I'm at 1.something.
You can upgrade it.
So I have to do a complete reinstall, and I keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off.
You have to reinstall.
One of these days, I'm
save all your configuration files if you're going to blow it away into a clean install.
Yeah.
Save all the configuration files.
Yep.
Because Asterisk is a bitch to configure, man. But once you get it going, it's
well,
it's
you know,
beautiful.
The Asterisk at Home is really
that didn't
easy,
seem
though.
So bad, yeah.
Because
I mean, compared to having to try to do it by
from
hand,
scratch, yeah.
Because I was trying to do it by hand.
It has a
Slackware Masochist.
I know.
Utility.
I like to compile everything myself.
I have a life, man. Sorry.
Oh, it was challenging.
Yeah, I have other things to do.
But you know, I did get it to work. It just, you know, then when I compared it to Asterisk at Home, it's just so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
Asterisk
at Home is equal to Not Myth for Myth TV.
I don't know. I haven't tried that yet either. I'm going to try.
We're going to have an install fest. We're going to do it. We're going to have a Myth TV install fest.
Well, I did get mine up and running the hard way. So
I've done that too.
Actually, it worked much better once I put the kernel up to 2.6, then. All my problems with IVTV went away.
Yeah. 2.6 is a beautiful thing, man. You know,
configure, make install, and it was good to go.
So the new version of Slackware, does it come with 2.6 by default now?
No, it's 2.4
Why didn't I get a switch over, man? Get with the times.
Soon, I would imagine.
Talk to Pat on that one.
Jeepers.
Maybe the next release, right?
11? I would hope so, yeah.
11 come on, it'll have 2.6 standard.
That's coming out pretty soon, though, isn't it?
It actually was a pretty painless. You know, I've never bothered it. You know, whatever kernel gets installed is the kernel I go with.
Me too.
On it, so I've never actually upgraded a kernel. But using the instructions they had in the testing on disk 2 in the Slackware directory, it worked really well.
Cool.
On it.
And what do you have to do? You have to install the kernel and the sources.
You install the kernel, the sources.
Make a BZ image.
You have to make that's already there for you, but you have to do a make. Was it make and nod? I think it is.
Okay.
I don't have it in front of me on it because I was running X
make nod. You have to upgrade your LILO.
And
that's it.
That's it. You add like 4 lines in the LILO, and it's good to go.
Woohoo!
You can just change the one line you already have in the LILO if you're sure it's going to work.
Well, yeah,
be sure.
I was gonna say I wasn't sure. So
you better be sure, man. But anyway, thanks. Real quick, thanks to Jordan McCollum for answering the question that I asked on the air. He sent me an email because he's not on IRC chat. I just think that's cool. You know, a little listener appreciation there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
See, now you guys would know if you read your freaking email.
I read my email. Back to Asterisk. In 3 weeks, we're going to have a listener call-in episode, but we're not going to have like a caller queue where you guys call us. What I'm going to do is we're going to put an announcement on the bulletin board. I'm going to ask anybody who wants to come on. If you want to come on, you're more than welcome to. And what I'll do is I'll bring my SIP phone. You guys give me your phone numbers. We'll line everybody up. And depending on how many people we have, you guys can come on for anywhere between SIP phone. Between 5 and 15 minutes, you can come on and talk about anything you like. Pitch to us, rant, whatever you'd like, man. We're going to have a listener show. All listener show. So
all listeners.
I already have one person who's a definite. I know JZA definitely wants to jump in. I'm sure other people, too, want to come on. So,
yeah. Guys,
listening on the RSC, man, by all means, you know, I'll put the announcement up. You know, contact me, and we'll get the list, and you guys will be on the list.
Speaking of contacting you, I have something that I want to talk to some of the listeners about really quick, which really doesn't pertain to anything about the textual other than the fact that We're on the tech show, and this is the group of people I want to get a hold of. I know that a lot of you guys out there know that I'm a Christian, and I've been thinking lately about doing a separate Christian-based like podcast thing, and I wanted to get a hold of you guys that I know are in IRC now and see if you would be interested in something like that. If you are, please drop me an email or something like that, and we'll go over the details. I just wanted to find out if anybody's interested.
That's not because I was looking to start a Satanist podcast.
There you go.
I'm joking.
And you do well at it.
I'm a Christian, too. It's cool.
But no, seriously, if you're interested, drop me an email. I'm sure you can go through the website and find my email address and stuff like that. Drop me an email. We'll go from there.
Cool.
Pretty
soon we're going to have a podcasting network.
Yeah, really. We'll have the we'll have the actual really free and open source podcasting network where we, don't have to censor people and do all that content based bullshit.
You can say fuck as much as you want.
Yeah.
Fuck.
We got to earn that explicit tag.
but what are you going to do?
The Linux link saved this show.
I know that Pat did an Ubuntu upgrade.
Yes,
to the latest pre-release.
Dapper Drake.
I did one tonight too. I wanted to be able to butt heads with you. Makes a little brainwave.
Okay.
Right before we came.
Shall I start or you want to start?
No, go right ahead.
All right. Well, I basically went the old Debian true and tried method of upgrading.
Mm-hmm.
I just went into my app sources list file. I pointed to the Dapper Drake repositories, did a apt-get disk upgrade, and fired away. It took about, between 2-3 hours, download everything and installing all the packages. There were over 1,500 packages upgraded and installed. So it was quite a bit. One of the new things with the new version of Ubuntu is that it uses Network Manager. Now, SUSE also uses Network Manager. Network Manager is this new application that it's especially geared towards laptop users where you can control your whole network environment. It'll detect your cards. It'll go out and scan for different wireless networks. It'll present the wireless networks. It looks fantastic. Unfortunately, it doesn't work well with my piece of shit, Walmart Chinese slave labor laptop. It doesn't like the wireless card that's in there, which is a no-name mini PCI card. It works great. Don't get me wrong. The card works fine. I just got to issue the commands manually.
You go now!
It works great. So I had that one minor issue. The other minor issues that I had was it seems when it did the upgrade, it reset a bunch of my settings. One example was my virtual desktops on the kicker panel. They were gone. I was like, what the frig? They're gone. But I was able to get that back pretty easily. I just went through the settings. Another odd thing that happened was XMMS, the MP playback was shut off for some reason. Very strange. So, minor inconveniences. But I haven't run it. It seems to be pretty stable. I'm not having any major issues so far. It's Ubuntu.
As the smoke pours from his laptop.
No, it seems to be okay.
Speaking of smoke pouring from laptops, did you guys see today on it? Maybe it was Dig or something like that.
That was a couple days ago, actually.
Was it really a couple days ago? The Mac laptop, yes, that burst into flames in some guy's kitchen or living room or some crap like that?
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of, and I even sent a message to Dean about this, was like, hey, man, that wouldn't happen if they had a chill pack, But I thought that was hysterical. Laptops bursting into flames.
Hey, it's Apple, man. What do you expect?
Man, oh, man. But no, I'll tell you, I did an upgrade myself.
Ask, Pat, when are we going to New York to pilgrimage?
Yeah, right.
You've got one now, so
worshiping at the glass building.
Yeah, how much did I pay for it?
The glass elevator that you can't get down in, right?
Without that's how much I'm gonna pay for it. Bank gave us some old machines, old laptops,
old G3s, Mac laptops, nifty something to play with.
I'm gonna do what I did with this machine. I will not, start it up with Windows at all. I'll just popping the disk.
I defy you to run Windows on that laptop.
that might be difficult. I'm not gonna,
you go ahead and start it up with Windows.
I'm not
going to
run Mac OS,
right.
Whatever's on there. I'm just going to. I think I'm going to try Debian on there. Or maybe Ubuntu.
Debian will work. You just got to remember it's the old world install stuff. So you got to have.
Look at the right.
You got to copy the bootloader crap off into Mac partition.
No, these are G3s. I think these are new world ROMs on here.
Not those ones. Not those ones. Those are either they're Pismos or Wall Street.
What I want to know is, can you get a wireless card working on that? They have PCMCIA slots.
Absolutely. If it's a true PCMCIA, you can pop in a regular old like Linksys wireless card, and under Linux it'll detect it and off you go. But anyway,
yeah, it depends on the kernel on there, because the laptops that you all, the one you gave me, but the one I had that 6300 or whatever the hell it was on it, that one. Under Mac, I can get a card running on that one, but because I didn't compile the kernel, as soon as you put it in there, it locks it up.
Because you got like a Debian that's, kernel on there from like 1992.
Yeah,
right?
No, it defaults to that one. That's why.
That'll do.
If you follow their installs on there, you know, and do a stock Debian install, it puts a 2.0 kernel on there.
Nifty. Listen, I did the Ubuntu upgrade too, just so I have something to interesting to talk about. I did the GK sudo space quote update dash manager space dash D. Yeah, did the update manager one.
I heard people having problems with that.
I don't know why. I did it that way, and it like the little GUI configuration screen popped right up. Do you want to install it? You know, and I said, yeah, go ahead and do it, and it did its thing. Towards the end, it asked me about three or four configuration files that I had modified previously, about whether I wanted to keep them or I wanted them replaced, you know, like a GDM comp and my motion comp file, which is a fantastic program if you're using, like, security cameras and stuff. And a couple other, you know, odds and ends here and there. And it just, you know, it did all its stuff and did the thing, and it was all happy and rebooted afterwards. The only odd thing about that is when I started using KDE on Breezy, right? I did the to install KDE, I did the Synaptic Package Management, and I installed Kubuntu dash desktop.
Yes, that should bring everything in you need.
Right.
And bare minimum.
And it did again.
Right.
Like it got the new KDE stuff again. Mm-hmm. But when I rebooted, instead of Ubuntu, or however the hell you want to say it,
Ubuntu.
It said Kubuntu. It had the K.
On the KDE, on the splash to KDE splash.
On the splash. Yes. No, I'm not on the boot splash.
On the boot splash.
On the boot splash.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, I had Ubuntu the base install. I was running Ubuntu.
Uh-huh.
And then I added, like you too.
Right, right.
But it has the old Ship Brown Ubuntu splash screen when it boots up.
When you boot, mine has a Kubuntu splash screen, and then after it boots, when it's sitting at the GDM login, it has the brown shit Ubuntu thing, which I didn't have chance to change yet, and then you know once you log in, it's got this nice new looks like pretty quick KDE going on. Of course, all the settings are changed, like Pat said, they're all wonky.
All shut off.
Yeah, this stuff is all.
One good thing though is the last version of Ubuntu, you know, Kubuntu, the KDE, they went in and they changed, you know, the default settings and some of the look and feel things of it, and I really didn't care for it. I personally, I like a stock KDE install. Okay, this time around though, to give those guys credit, it's much more of a stock install, which is great. I like that. I want it to look KDE to look like the same on any freaking distro I try it on.
Right. Right, right, right. That'd be good. But I wanted to do the upgrade just for, you know, shits and giggles. I fully intend on downloading the ISO tomorrow or tonight, midnight or something like that. And
good
doing
luck.
An absolute
good
well,
luck,
if I
man.
Grab it as soon as it's available, right?
Yeah, good luck, man.
But or they'll have it on torrent, which will be good.
Yeah, BitTorrent's probably the way to go.
BitTorrent will be the shit tomorrow, sometime tomorrow afternoon. If you grab it on BitTorrent, you'll get it right away. I fully intend on doing it and doing a regular old plain clean install, right? Why? Because when I upgraded or when I got Breezy on the machine that I'm using now, I upgraded from Hori and did the same, like, update manager thing. So I know there's, like, crappy junk floating around in there somewhere, old configurations and crap. Like, I like to start fresh every now and then.
Fresh.
And, yep, fresh. I'll install it fresh on there and check it out.
Sounds like a Massengale douche commercial.
Check it out for a couple days. If I don't
You're
like it.
You're not feeling fresh.
Here we come, Slackware.
You can always go to SUSE.
Here we come, Slackware. Here we come. I don't have enough hours in the day to install SUSE.
So
I still would like to try it.
So what are you trying to say? Gen 2 is out of the question?
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw a lot of guys talking about that in the forums, like, oh, how wonderful Gen 2 is, and it's a wonderful thing, and I just love it. And now I can compile and I can tune everything for my specific
hardware.
You know what? You only get 1 or 2 nanoseconds worth of performance boost out of that speed boost.
It's not worth it. Nope.
It is not worth it. For those of you who actually have a life and a job and a family and
things to do,
that ain't worth it, man. If you want a fast distribution, go to Slackware. I'm not saying that Gen 2 is not a nice distribution. It's nice when it's going. You know what I mean? Like, I really dig it when it's up and running. I just wish they had, like, a portion of Gen 2 where, like, you know, they have the 3-stage install thing. I wish they had a 4-stage install, or the fourth part of the
install.
There
is an option.
That's all binary packages.
There is an option.
Already
yes.
done, right?
Carrara? Carrara, people know Carrara from as the XGL demo that, you know, they got called for GPL violation.
Uh-huh.
Well, the real Carrara, what the project primarily is an easy way to install Gen 2, all binary.
All binary. See, now,
check it out.
That would be cool.
Check out Carrara, man.
That would be cool. I wouldn't mind trying that at all. That would be all right. If it was a complete binary install, I think that would probably be the tits right up there with, like, you know, maybe even up there.
The guy, he was. I don't know if he was on. I think they had an interview with him on DistroWatch. They've read it out,
mm-hmm.
And basically he said that, you know, he just wanted an easy way for people to try out Gen 2,
yeah,
with having to sit through, you know, freaking 4-day install.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Exactly. Like, I can't, if I go changing my distribution, and even though, I mean, like, you guys who have seen my website and stuff, you know that I obviously have more than one workstation at my house available for me to read my mail and stuff, right? Obviously.
Well,
we're talking several.
No, nothing against Gen 2 project. We're going to have those guys on. They mm-hmm. are coming on in the future.
Right.
Their documentation on their website is top notch.
Oh, yeah.
Kudos
to
those guys.
They got the best Linux documentation.
Very well done. Very well done.
I don't know what it is about these guys that can actually write documentation that's not so, you know, backwards and configured.
Very
like
simple
everybody
to follow,
else does, you know?
Beautifully written. Excellent.
Yep.
The documentation team is top-notch.
They got good stuff there as opposed to, you know, pick your other distribution that has shitty documentation.
Documentation is the bane, man.
Yep.
It really is, man.
No doubt.
This kind of leads into, you know, I had posted a poll, you know, what makes the perfect distro and what's important to people when they look at a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Is it package management? Is it speed? Is it reliability? Is it stability? Is it cutting edge? And it seems most people want, it's a combination of everything.
Sure, it depends on who you ask, right?
Yeah, like for me, it's a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Package management is very important, okay? But it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
I try to look at the whole package when I decide what kind of distribution I want to run. Not every distribution is perfect, you know? You got to take the good and the bad, but you got to look, it's you know, you have to think about what's important to you at the end of the day, what can you deal with, what can you fix, and what you can't deal with. And that's how you decide what you're going to stick with. That's how I look at
right.
it.
Right, right. You know, I mean, it, you know, if everything is really important to you and you have to have a rock-solid system, then you're going to run Mac OS X just like Pat does.
Debian.
Slackware. No. All right. So should we foray, gentlemen?
Before we do that, let's get
Mr.
Alan. Let's get Alan here. Alan, what's important to you in a Linux distribution? What are you looking
Slackware.
For?
There you go.
But you
good,
say Slackware.
Good answer.
What is it about Slackware that makes you love Slackware?
I'm familiar with it.
You're too lazy to learn anything different.
No.
No?
No, I was playing around with Fedora Core 5 when I got the new drive on. I played around with it for about a week, and it's just, you know,
it's not Slackware, right?
Yeah, I just liked the way that Slackware ran versus the Fedora. I mean, the Fedora is real nice. It did everything. You plug in, you know, a USB key, and the little, you know, it pops up for you.
What do you think
like
of
that.
Yum?
Well, yum sucked.
That's slow, right?
Yeah. Although I did find this, there's an unofficial Fedora Core 5 facts on the web there that had different repositories to go to that made it actually usable. But as it's shipped, it was, yeah, it was...
One way of getting...
It would fire up and say that it's going out to look for any upgrades.
Forever, man.
And, you know, the next morning it would still be stuck on that screen. So I sort of gave up on that one. But I just like it's simplicity, but yet everything you need is there.
You see, I like that whole notion of that. To me, the weakness of Slack is the whole package thing.
You know, see, I don't have a problem compiling.
I don't want to compile. I've got other things to do besides compiling all day.
But you don't always have to on Slackware either.
Yeah,
true. If you can go to Linux packages.
Yeah, you can go and get those things there. But, you know, it's five steps. It's not really that hard. At least for me. I don't see it as being that major of a thing.
Well,
yeah, you read the README. It tells you all the things that it needs. Oh, I got this. I don't got this. You download them. /configure, make, and for me, check install.
Check install, yeah.
Yeah, because I just happen to like check install.
It's a clean way of getting rid of things without having to freaking do, you know, like a
and it just
make
works.
Uninstall.
It just works for me.
Right.
I mean, granted, it takes longer to do.
I ran Slackware for a solid 3 years, man.
It's just also its challenge.
You learn.
Said, you know, I put a myth box together without using any packages.
Yeah, you're masochist, man.
And, you know, it really wasn't, but it really wasn't that bad.
No.
There's a lot of information.
There's a how-to. You can follow the instructions.
Well, there's a lot of information on the myth page. They've got a really nice documentation going on there. But it's just, you know, it wasn't that hard to do. You know,
no,
I still got some little things I want to tweak on it. You know, I got to get the plugins working, and because I didn't do any of the plugins yet.
Right.
Well, I did weather, and that's the only one I've got so far on there. On it, but you know, I'll do rather than do the general. Let's compile all the plugins at once.
So
I'll
you
just
got
do the ones
so you got
I want.
Not Myth 30 minutes, and then you got Slackware 30 days.
No, it took me about a day.
Yeah, a solid day though.
No, well, I mean I did it over. You know, like I said, I played Bachelor this weekend because the wife was away on it, so.
See,
for
now, he says that, but he never invited me over for cigar.
I
not
now. Drink some ping on, drink
bastard.
Some scotch. And
I'll get you all
I would have went over there for a cigar and scotch. I would give him a shit, man. I'll go over there now for a cigar and scotch, you know?
Well, you still may be coming over because I will need some, I've got some
you need to
MySQL
back up?
Configuration
Ooh.
Things I need to.
Alan needs a back rub.
SQL.
On it, so... I'll get you over there to get because it's for some reason it's only letting things come in from the local machine, so I'm not sure what I fucked up.
Something,
yeah,
for sure.
Something's fucked up,
but it works. I figured you can figure it out.
Yeah, you think? Speaking of that, you know what happened to me the other day? And this, I feel almost bad saying this, right? I have a Slackware install. Of my at work that I'm using for a LAMP server, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. And I looked in the error log, the Apache error log, and I keep getting this message over and over and over and over and over again about it. Something can't write to a file, and some little error code after that, right? Can't write to a file. Can't write. It doesn't say what freaking file it's trying to write to. Can't write to the file. It's giving me error codes. I look it up on the internet, right? Nothing. Nothing about this freaking thing.
Nothing.
So I'm tooling around figuring, all right, there's got to be something in the var directory, right? I'm looking around. I finally stumble upon what? The access log for Apache, which has, at this point in time, exceeded the 2 gig file size limit.
Time to rotate.
It's an old Linux install, old Slackware install, right? 2 gig file size limit. It exceeded it. Can't write to the Apache access log anymore. Therefore, I keep spitting out this freaking error message saying, "No, there's an error. Can't write to a file." It took me like half an hour to find that, just because it doesn't like it's not a smart error telling you, you know, hey, your freaking log's full, you dope. Before I actually found this log, I rebooted, I tried, checked everything I could think of, and I figured, all right, I'll reboot the machine, And this is the part that really pisses me off. I caved in and I rebooted the machine thinking, all right, this has got to fix it if I reboot the machine. Maybe it's a corrupted file, right? Reboot the machine, it'll do a file system check, everything would be cool. So I reboot the machine, but before I do it, I check the freaking uptime. The machine is up. My web server, this little dumpy crap
drum roll,
box,
please.
That I had up as a temporary box that all of a sudden everything in the facility is working on now was up 397 days.
Sweet.
So over a year's worth of uptime, it would still be up now if I hadn't rebooted it like a tard. So, but I do think that rebooting was a good idea because when I did the shutdown, dash R, it wouldn't shut down.
It refused.
Yeah. No,
it would not shut down.
I tried that like five times. I finally had to go and push the damn power button on the server. So evidently something was screwy somewhere. However, it's been working for over a year without me even touching the damn thing. Like I had to blow the dust off of the power button kind of thing, you know? So, yep, I was a tard. I could have left it running. I feel so horrible about it now that I found out that it was just a freaking, you know, 2 gig limit on the file size for the log file. I could have just, you know, I just catted nothing to the log and it was good working. Damn. And stuff like that just pisses you off, you know? And I was in a hurry, so I didn't even take, like, a screenshot of the uptime. 397
missed opportunities,
man. 397 days.
Like, you're going to be lying on your deathbed. Why didn't I take a screenshot?
What's my uptime, man? No, that really pissed me off, though. That sucked. That really sucked. So, moral of the story, you know.
Never reboot.
Yep. Should never have to reboot your Linux box if you're careful and check the size of your freaking log file. 2 gigs, that's a good time to truncate it. Right? We ready, gentlemen?
And that Dan moment has been brought to you by...
beer. Whiskey. James. Ah, did I tell you? Back to the whiskey and cigar thing real quick. Listen, guys. Over the weekend, my parents came down and my sister and her fiancé. This guy, her fiancé, can drink beer, man. Let me tell you.
How much, like, did he put away?
He can like a fish, right?
He's got two livers?
He can, three or four, at least. Anyway, he also likes to smoke cigars. I happen to enjoy the occasional cigar myself. And so we went, just to, real quick, there's a place in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's called the Bethlehem Brew Works. Okay.
Which is right up the street from Cigars International.
It's a brew works place and a brewery. They make their own beer, and it just happens to be two doors up from the Cigars International, which also, if you smoke cigars, is the place. Hit their website. Look it up on Google, Cigars International.
Macanudos, baby.
Anyway, inside Cigars International, they sell acid cigars, which I really happen to love. And so we each grabbed an acid and then went over to the Brew Works where he happened to have the entire Brew Works. And I had like three fingers of Jameson's over ice. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I highly advocate for all of you unhealthy people like myself to take a couple hours off every now and then.
I believe tomorrow is a is a tasting over there.
Thursday, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Is it this Thursday?
It is, yeah, at CI, yeah. Yeah, I believe it is.
Cigars and a microbrew, I think.
Uh-huh.
That was supposed to be last week.
I think it is.
All right.
Yeah, I think it is. But, yeah, definitely I highly advocate. That's a wonderful way to relax for an hour or two, you know. Nice cigar. Nice whiskey.
We may have to take a ride over there tomorrow.
We could have brought cigars tonight and stunk out Dan's house.
He would have cared.
Yeah, we couldn't. He wouldn't have cared, yeah.
It's not the first time we fired him up in here.
That's true.
Let's do the
Mark Shuttleworth interview.
Mark Shuttleworth interview. Here it is on the Take Show.
Do the introductions, Pat.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Mark Shuttleworth with us, the founder of Ubuntu. Mark, welcome to the show. We appreciate you taking the time to come on and speak to us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You got some big stuff coming in the next couple of days, yes?
Yes, it is. Finally, the Dapper Drake is landing this week, and all indications are that we will have the June 1st date. We have some feedback from release candidate, but all seems to look good.
Yeah, Dapper Drake already landed on my system a few weeks ago, and I got to say, Ubuntu is a fantastic distribution, and Dapper Drake is just, you know, just that much better. It is so good.
Well, it's been really interesting for us to put the extra little bit of time into this release. We, you know, we were quite conservative in the goals for this release, which gave us a little more breathing space to really polish and do the QA. And at the same time, then we extended the release date a little bit for an extra bit of internationalization and more hardware-oriented QA. So this has been a fun process, been a big learning curve, and the community has really, really made it an exciting kind of ride.
Yeah, there's been a lot of flack that you guys have gotten for pushing it back, the release date.
Well, we went out to the community and said and asked the question whether we should push it back. And overwhelmingly, I think the response came back that people wanted to see this release of Ubuntu step up to the level that Red Hat Enterprise, for example, steps up to. And so that was kind of enough of a mandate for us then to say, all right, we'll do it. We'll push the release back and make sure we really get that stuff well done. But at the same time, yeah, I think everybody is looking forward to the next release as well, where we will kind of get back to the idea of delivering everything that's latest and greatest and cutting edge right on the day that it releases.
Speaking of the enterprise, we've heard news that you guys are making a big push into the enterprise server market. We've heard an announcement that you guys are making a partnership with Sun, I believe.
Well, we have a number of partnerships now with the global Tier 1 hardware providers. Can you tell me what date this will be aired on and whether or not we can consider it embargoed until June 1st?
It's going to be May 31st.
It's going to be May 31st.
Yeah.
Okay. In that case, I can say yes. By May 31st, we will have announced that we are extending Dapper to cover Spark as an architecture. And in particular, we're really excited that we will be Dapper will work out of the box on the new Niagara T1000 and T2000 boxes from Sun. And that is our first step towards kind of enterprise-grade server-oriented certification. And we'll be broadening that relationship with Sun over the coming weeks and months to cover a wider array of Sun's hardware.
You said Dapper is going to work on Spark. Is it going to work on Spark like on the release date, or is this something that you plan to happen, you know, a little while down the road, a few days down the road?
Well, we knew a couple of months back that we were going to support Spark generally, traditional Spark. That's Ultra Spark 3 and 4, I believe. What we didn't believe we could do was get the T1000, the Ultra Spark T1, the massively multi-core, multi-threaded architecture in for the release date. But, you know, because of Sun's Open Spark approach, where they have published all of the reference specifications, all of the RTL, you know, everything that you need to know about the microprocessor is effectively GPL'd. Because of that, there's been just huge community buzz around Linux on that processor. And so we've been working with the community guys and our own developers and Sun's engineers, and we were able to get all of that in for the Dapper release date. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without the delay, so that was another argument in favor of the delay. So on June 1st, those Spark bits will work right out of the box on a T1000 or T2000 box and take full advantage of the hardware. If you look at the benchmarks, Apache on Ubuntu on those boxes outperforms Solaris on the same boxes running.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. So I should be able to get it to work on my, say, dual proc Ultra 2 as well then, right?
Don't know about an Ultra 2. You'll have to look into the specific machines that that release claims to support. And what we're doing at the moment is working on actually formally certifying some of the other models, workstation and server, that are currently available from Sun.
Mm-hmm. That's outstanding.
Now, one of the really exciting things that I heard was you guys were going to provide a special LAMP distribution of Ubuntu, where it's a whole LAMP sweep right out of the box.
That's right. We're trying to figure out. We spent some time thinking about, you know, what does it mean to bring Ubuntu to the server, and you know, we work very closely with Debian, and the Debian community has a fantastic reputation for reliability and quality on the server. So we wanted to build on that and then bring something special that really is sort of Ubuntu-oriented to that. And we thought that the best way to express what we think Ubuntu is all about is that kind of just works experience. And so for the servers, the way we interpret that is we look at some of the things that people typically want to do with a server. So, you know, 80% of the web servers that are set up out there on Ubuntu, we learned, are basically PHP servers with a MySQL backend. So we said, why not set it up so that people can have that experience and have it just work? So with Dapper, that'll be the first of what we're calling fully certified stacks. With Dapper, you'll be able to put the server CD into the server, type LAMP at the command prompt, and 15 minutes later, you should have a complete server with the operating system, with MySQL, PHP, and Apache all installed and configured, so that your next act can be to start editing your homepage. Just drop PHP files in and have everything just work.
That's fantastic. Will you guys be offering commercial support for that product or no?
Yes, we will. So this is, again, part of the whole sort of process of stepping up to become one of the global commercial entities. We will have 24/7 English and French telephone commercial support available for both the server and the desktop versions, releases of Ubuntu, for both Ubuntu and Kubuntu.
Now, do you have the pricing schedule set up for that? Or do you know what you're going to charge for these services?
Yes, I believe that on the server side of things, for example, for Ubuntu running on these T1000 and T2000 boxes, support starts at about $700 per year per machine, and that's for, I think, Monday to Friday, 8 to 5 U.S. time zones support in English or French. The details of that are available on the Ubuntu and Canonical website, and anyone who's interested should look at those and then email info@canonical.com.
The question I really want to know, Mark, I'm sure you've addressed it in the past, is why did you start Ubuntu, especially since Debian has been around for such a long time and it has quite the following that it currently has? What was your, you know, why did you want to do this?
Well, for a number of reasons. First, I felt like I needed to give back to the free software community. This is a community that has essentially made it possible for me to go and explore all sorts of frontiers that I just wouldn't have been able to do if Linux and Debian and Apache and MySQL and Python hadn't existed. So I wanted to have some vehicle to give back. Second, I didn't think that there was anybody out there that was building a desktop oriented distribution or a distribution which really had commercial professionalism built into it, above and beyond what you get in the professionalism of the community itself, but that was also committed to being genuinely free. It seemed to me that Red Hat and Novell were essentially taking a proprietary software approach to free software. Yes, the bits themselves are free software, but if you look at the licensing terms around, say, Red Hat Network or the equivalent from Novell, it's really a proprietary kind of relationship that you have with them. You end up having to pay, basically, for every machine that you install. And that seemed to me to miss out on the real point of free software and the potential of free software to become something that's economically transformative. So I set myself the challenge of setting up something new. And I don't see us as being at odds with, for example, Debian in any way. We're part of that family, and a lot of what we do, hopefully most of what we do, ends up making its way back to Debian. But Debian is kind of this universal platform. It's a bit like Linux itself when you think of it coming from kernel.org. They don't optimize for any one particular use case. And so much like Linux itself then goes on to be deployed in everything from mainframes to watches, and those individual communities sort of optimize and specialize for their particular use cases, I see Ubuntu as being a version of Debian that's really optimized for you, me, and my grandmother.
So you were, it says according to Wikipedia, that you were actually a Debian developer back in the 90s.
I was the original maintainer of Apache in Debian, just because when I started using Debian, I needed an Apache package. There wasn't one there, so I packed it up, and for a little while I continued to maintain it. And I'm still a Debian developer today.
Ah, so then were you... Were you a software developer or an IT administrator? I mean, what is it that brought you to need, like, Apache and then you deciding to maintain it?
Okay. I was a student at the University of Cape Town, and notionally I was studying finance, but my real love was technology. So I was carrying quite a few of the information systems courses along at the time. And I was trying to figure out what sort of business I could build for myself in the Internet, because this is 1995, and the Internet was really taking off all around the world. I wanted to be involved with that in some way. So I started doing a bit of website design and consulting. And as a result, I was setting up websites and web servers for companies. And I really liked the Debian approach, but of course I needed Apache. So I packaged it up and joined the Apache, the Debian community, and became the maintainer. After that, I tended to focus mostly on Python software development, on cryptography, because the business that I started, which was originally sort of a website consulting business, I got more and more interested in cryptography and digital certificates. And so ended up writing a whole crypto public key infrastructure in Python, and that, you know, was the essence of Thought, which then got sold to VeriSign in 99.
Now, do you still continue to develop, particularly for, you said Debian, and also do you develop for Ubuntu?
I do very little bit of the coding for the bits and pieces that go into Ubuntu itself. At the moment, with Ubuntu, I'm mostly driving sort of the overall look and feel and functional specifications for each release. What I do hack on quite a lot is something called Launchpad.net, which is the infrastructure that we use in Ubuntu for tracking bugs, specifications, and so on. And I'm responsible there for Blueprint, which is part of Launchpad, which we use for tracking feature specifications. So it's kind of like a project management tool for the distro. And it's also widely used now by upstream projects, because we wrote it, Launchpad, in such a way that it wouldn't just be good for us, but that if anyone else wanted to use it, it was there as well. So think of it as like a source forge, but it has the particular sort of possibility to allow collaboration across projects. So say you have a bug in Ubuntu, which is actually also a bug in upstream Firefox, and we can track that bug simultaneously in both places. And if one person provides a fix, then everyone else can immediately grab that fix.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Pretty neat. Yeah.
And I trust you're not taking the same mistakes or complexity that Bugzilla has along with it.
That's who has?
I'm sorry, I popped out there for a second.
I lost you for a second. I take it that you're not making the same mistakes as, and then I lost you?
Oh, okay. I said I trust you're not making the same mistakes or complexity and design issues that Bugzilla has.
Well, one of the goals has been to produce something that's easier for new people to use than Bugzilla. And also to separate out, there are sort of three separate tracking components effectively in Launchpad. One is for feature specifications, which is kind of forward-looking things that we want to write. One is for bugs, which is, you know, issues right now in the code base. And then there's another one for support, because what we found is that people tended to, if they only had one bug tracker, they tended to mix and match all of those three kinds of things in that platform. And really, what we want to do is we want to have different communities each able to track those different aspects for a particular package in the distro or for a particular upstream. The Launchpad has all three of those, and they're kind of each application is optimized for that particular use case, support being different to bugs, being different to feature specifications.
I have a question for you, Mark. With the release of Ubuntu originally, was it seen as a stepping stone to a commercial enterprise product?
Sorry, which release of Ubuntu?
Just when you first released Ubuntu, was it seen, you know, the desktop version, was that seen as a stepping stone to the enterprise offerings that you're currently going to be releasing?
Well, first, when you say kind of commercial product, Ubuntu will always be free of charge. We have no interest in producing a $19.99 or $59.99 commercial edition. And to the extent that when we say a commercial product, what we mean is a free software distribution for which there is commercial support if you want it. And absolutely, yes. When we started with Ubuntu, our goal was to produce something which would be both community-driven and at the same level of professionalism as you would expect from Windows Vista or Red Hat Enterprise, but to have that level of professionalism both on the server and on the desktop. But we knew that we had to start somewhere, and a lot of what we did in the first two releases or three releases was about proving that we actually could ship something, ship it predictably, ship it on time, manage the process. We also needed quite a lot of infrastructure to be built in order to actually manage the process. And so we've been investing very heavily along the way from the very beginning in Launchpad in order to be able to manage a community of this sort of size and complexity in a sort of productive and efficient kind of way.
Now, Canonical, you have employees all around the world. I guess you're using the whole internet paradigm where you have people just all over the place, you know, communicating over the internet. You have no central office, right?
There isn't a central office. There are a couple of places where there are kind of clusters of people. We have a cluster down in Sydney. I think there are about six folks in Sydney. There's a small cluster in London. I'm based in London. There's another little cluster down in Brazil where we have a bunch of developers. But those aren't sort of official development offices and so on. It just happens to be that when we have a bunch of people in a particular place, then they often get together. But even in those cities, we have guys who work from home rather than sort of going to an environment where they're sort of constantly disrupted by other people. And that has been one of the big challenges for us. You know, one of the fun goals for myself has been to try and build an operation that was truly distributed in the sort of 21st century way and see how we could, what tools and processes we could develop to make that efficient and functional. And one of our goals is to show that it's possible to build a cohesive team that operates effectively despite being distributed like that, and then to export any of the tools and processes that we develop in that learning process as tools that the rest of the free software community can adopt if they want as well.
What I find really interesting about Ubuntu, it kind of like runs opposite of what the path other distributions have chosen to take, where they build a Linux system that's a great server and then move into the desktop market. But Ubuntu started, it seems, going right for the desktop market, and now it's working its way back.
I think that's an absolutely fair that's an absolutely fair observation. The reason we did it that way is because we believe that desktop is where the real challenges lie. And so we wanted to show that we actually could make a credible desktop for you and me and our friends. And by doing that, we would stand out from the crowd effectively. When we started in 2004, Linux on the server was already fairly well understood. And so if Ubuntu had come out and just focused on the server, it wouldn't have been interesting or compelling to anybody. By focusing on the desktop, we've been able to build a fantastic community of people who, for better or worse, really enjoy participating because desktop is visual. It's something that they can see, that they can share, that they can love, that they can help their friends to understand and so on. So it's much more shareable when it's desktop-oriented. And on the back of the kind of collaborative effort of that community, I think we're now able to really start to build something that can compete with Red Hat Enterprise. And that's, I think, very important for the free software, for the evolution of free software. Right? I think Richard Stallman and others ultimately will be very happy to think that there is a platform that's largely community-driven, where community members can hold any position effectively within the organization that ultimately drives the Ubuntu, and yet that has the resources and the focus to deliver a professional-level release.
The response from the community has been nothing short of amazing. I mean, did you ever think you would get this response? Has it exceeded your estimates of where it would be?
Yeah. It really has, and much of what we've been able to achieve in the last two releases has very much been because of community input, and we're learning a tremendous amount about how to get that energy to be productive. One of the challenges we find, for example, is that community members, in order to maintain balance in their lives, it's sensible for them only to contribute, you know, an hour or two a day, or sometimes 4 or 5 hours a day, but you know, it's a part-time volunteer hobby thing, so it needs to be kept in balance for the rest of their lives. So we have to figure out ways in which we can integrate the contributions of people on that basis, on the basis which it makes sense for them to contribute. And that's been somewhat challenging. You know, the pace of change in Ubuntu is such that it's almost a full-time job just to keep up with it. So we're learning how to present that in such a way that part-time volunteer members can actually make a real contribution and have that contribution show up in the desktop, release by release.
Now, with the challenge of getting Linux on the desktop, it seems like there's two primary hurdles that one faces, and that's like some of the technical issues about making it easier for general users to be able to add software, add new hardware and stuff like that. And that seems to be like almost an easier obstacle than the second issue, which is legal issues surrounding proprietary formats, particularly in audio and video, and you know, different technologies that people want to be able to access, want to feel that they have the right to access, but legally under Linux, it's just not there right now. What are you doing, or what do you think that you can do in the future for that, the legal aspects?
All right. So let me speak to both of those. The first one, I agree with you, is almost easier to address, and that's hardware support. Partly we address that just by investing in it, by hiring people who love working with hardware. And if you know any guys out there who are passionate about working with hardware and with Linux, ask them to give me a shout. The second thing is more complex. It's a social legal issue around DRM, around patents, and so on. My view there is that we're on the right side of the fence, right? Even if it's going to take some time for the rest of the world to realize it, people will tend ultimately to move towards a system of greater sanity. And when you look at things like DRM, they really are destructive to the relationships between content owners and their customers. And you can't win a war on your own customers. And groups like the Recording Industry Association and others are going to realize that, you know, filing suit against thousands and thousands of your own customers is not a great way to build a market. We're moving into an era where the successful strategy for content owners is to make their content as accessible as possible around the world, and then to encourage the people who can and will pay for that content to do so. And in fact, if you want to do that, then you don't want to put any DRM in between you and your customers. If you look at what DRM has done for the music industry in the last 3 years, for example, all it's done is give the keys of power in that industry to Apple, because, you know, for fear of few customers copying their music, most companies have done deals with Apple, which mean now that unless that music is available, unless new music is available in the Apple DRM format, it won't reach the majority of the players out there in the marketplace. The DRM has effectively, I think, been very dangerous for the content owners in the music industry. And we'll see the movie industry make exactly the same mistake, I'm sure. So, well, what will happen over time is that those industries will figure that out and start to pursue strategies for widespread content distribution. What they really want is they want the network to work for them. And the only way they can do that is to abandon DRM entirely. So I expect to see that over the next 5 to 10 years. The other thing that I expect to see is that technology for making content available is going to become at very high quality, is going to become available under free software license. So we've seen, for example, the emergence of the OGG format, which is patent-free and which is of very, very high quality, better quality than MP3 and most of the proprietary DRM-enabled codecs as well. I think we'll see the same thing happening in the video space. If you look at the BBC's work with Dirac, which is a video encoder of extremely high quality, which will be available patent-free as well. But I suspect that what will happen is that large numbers of consumer electronics will start to adopt those formats because they can save a couple of pennies or a couple of dollars per unit if they adopt those formats internally. And once that happens, then I think we'll be done for good with the nonsense that is DRM.
Well, you bring up some good points there. And one of the things that I see as being an opposition to OGG and the codec that you mentioned that the BBC is looking at is the fact that out of the box, neither Windows nor Apple supports those codecs. And it makes it difficult for people who use those operating systems to watch that type of media.
That's absolutely absolutely correct. However, I do expect the proprietary vendors to start to converge on open standards and open formats, simply because the pendulum is swinging so heavily in that direction. If you look at what's happening with Open Document, for example, I'm pretty confident that at some stage in the next 3 years, Microsoft will announce that they formally will support Open Document as one of the native file formats that Microsoft Office reads and writes. Why? Because if they don't, they're simply going to continue to make themselves vulnerable to somebody else providing that technology. As governments start to demand it, as customers and consumers start to demand it, as the industry starts to demand it, the large-scale proprietary vendors are simply going to have to support this format. So yes, that is speculative, but I do believe that the balance of power at the moment does lie with people who are proponents of open standards and open formats.
You're starting to see a lot of the audio players now have AUG playback capability built in out of the box, and which is a good thing, because it does sound better.
Where you see AUG formats are in the new upstart characters, right? The guys who want to get as much functionality in the box as low cost as possible and try and essentially differentiate themselves from Apple. And I suspect what will happen then is that AUG will become pervasive in those markets, become essentially difficult for Apple to leave out, because any chip that they buy to put into an iPod will do AUG, you know, natively. They will have to effectively be disabling it left, right, and center. And that's going to make less and less sense over time.
Not to Apple.
Well, have you seen Rockbox?
Have you seen what?
Rockbox.
No.
Linux for your iPod. It's awesome. It rocks. Check it out.
Oh, wait. I have seen the iPod Linux project.
Oh, no. This is different. So iPod Linux and Rockbox are similar in the sense that they both aim to provide a different OS. But Rockbox really has some amazing advantages, and it supports allows you to play AUG right out of the box on your iPod. Give it a shot.
We don't have iPods anymore. They all broke.
I have an iAudio, which is made by a Korean company, and that plays AUG, and it's fantastic. It's cheap, works great. It's more functional than the comparative Apple product for the same price. I love it.
It's going to be really interesting to see what Apple does with its dominance in the MP3 player market. Right now they have about 70% market share over there, and I suspect that they're not going to be able to get that market share number up any higher over time, simply because there's a customer fatigue effect, right, where people get tired of – people don't want to have the same thing that everybody else wants. And you end up in the sort of Windows position of then trying to do something that sort of pleases everybody. And that's very, very – it's a very difficult position to be in. But Apple has done extremely well as a sort of leading-edge innovator. I don't know if they can sustain themselves as kind of a – not a monopoly, but an industry-dominant player. It'd be very interesting to see how they handle that. That new position.
Now, has the iPod had a lot of market penetration in South Africa?
It has. You know, it really is a global phenomenon. And it's been a superb and brilliant piece of execution by Apple. I wouldn't detract from it in any way whatsoever. But I do think that Apple is going to find itself first fighting a tougher and tougher battle with the content owners, who, to be honest, are not the world's smartest most dynamic companies, right? They are very much in eek mode, in retreat mode at the moment. But they are going to, you know, wisen up very quickly to the fact that they have handed over the keys to their industry to cute and cuddly Apple, which is now suddenly dictating terms to them, as, you know, specifically because of DRM. If the content industry had dictated that iTunes, A, be an open platform and specification, and B, use formats that did not have DRM associated with them, then while that would have put them at more risk of file sharing and piracy, it would also have meant that people could buy iPods and then move that music straight across to a Creative Labs player. In other words, the network would be working for them. Instead, they've now created a situation where anybody who's bought tons of music from them via iTunes is kind of locked into an Apple world because of the Apple DRM that's wrapped around that music.
Well, speaking of South Africa, and that's the country you were born, yes,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, all your achievements have at least accelerated you to some celebrity status in South Africa. Has that helped with the adoption of Ubuntu or Linux in general in South Africa?
I don't do a lot of work, you know, wearing my Ubuntu hat. In South Africa. I do quite a lot of work wearing my free software and open source hat in South Africa. So, for example, I funded a program in South Africa together with HP and the CSIR, which is a government department in South Africa, called Go Open Source, it was really almost like a promotional advertising campaign, awareness building campaign, specifically for open source in South Africa. It was built around the idea that There's no company that speaks for free software in the same way that Microsoft speaks for Microsoft products. And so we ran this program. There was a TV show. We had 13 episodes, which were great, very funny, very well put together, very local. And we make those available now under Creative Commons licenses so that other countries can broadcast them as well. And there was a series of radio interviews and other kinds of educational and awareness building programs. So yes, I do kind of, to the extent that I have a voice in South Africa, I do use that voice to speak in favor of better regulation of telecommunications, although there's a long way to go there in South Africa, and faster adoption of free software.
GoOpen was fantastic.
I'm glad that you...
Will there be any more new episodes of GoOpen anytime soon, or is that done?
That's pretty much done. I think we covered all of the basics, right? We did everything that you could do to get people to that sort of first basic level of awareness where they are open to things like Firefox and AbbeyWord and maybe a little bit of game and possibly even a Linux desktop. So we really sort of laid the foundations, I think, for what should come after that, which is commercial companies then building a sort of a commercial ecosystem. I think we were a little bit ahead of the curve in the sense that there's now a bit of pause. There are commercial companies coming up. IBM in South Africa is starting to talk more about Linux. The government is starting to talk more about Linux. Canonical, in due course, will have a stronger presence in South Africa. It's just not a very large market for us at the moment. So there's a little bit of a gap, I guess, between the punch that we brought in those 2 years and the sort of commercial uptake then starting to flesh out the ecosystem around free software.
Are you seeing more positive results in London and around Britain with regards to adoption of open software, open source?
Yeah, the UK is a very interesting country from a free software perspective. On the one hand, there's a tremendous amount of free software energy here, right, in the sense of, great big swaths of research and work started here in the UK. You know, if you look at things, everything from Xen to Debian to many of these very substantial projects have deep roots here in the UK, particularly in the academic community. But at a government and commercial level, adoption has been quite low. So there's tremendous awareness. There's a lot of actual contribution, not a lot of adoption. Where we see, you know, the most aggressive adoption is in countries like China, which has said at a national government level that they want 100% of their software acquisition by 2010 to be based on Linux. So that's an extremely aggressive, extremely focused, extremely clear policy in favor of free software. Other countries which have taken similar lines, although none have been quite as focused and clear about it as the Chinese have been countries like Brazil, Spain, some of the other South American countries, which have Indonesia, which have identified free software as being the sensible, forward-looking technology strategy for their economy.
Now, changing gears, GNOME is a default desktop in Ubuntu. There's also Kubuntu and Zubuntu, which is XFCE. What's the official standing with these projects? I mean, it's obvious that, you know, GNOME is where the main push is for Ubuntu. What about these other desktops?
Okay, we kind of put everything into sort of a series of categories. The first category being fully supported, in other words, where you get the availability of commercial support. The second category being where we make a commitment to doing security updates, but not to where Canonical itself doesn't provide commercial support for that platform. And then the third category being kind of experimental. It's there, but you're on your own. You might get security updates, but maybe not kind of status. And of the projects that you mentioned, Ubuntu and Kubuntu, which are a GNOME desktop and a KDE desktop, respectively, are both officially supported with commercial support available and security updates. Zubuntu, which is the XFCE desktop, has now reached the point where we're comfortable committing to providing security updates because we have a good relationship with the community and we know that that we can manage that process and that relationship well. But we don't yet provide official support for the platform. So the Zubuntu desktop release is out there in Dapper. I would encourage people to use it if they're looking for a lightweight desktop on older hardware or in a thin client kind of environment. But it's not something that we will likely just offer commercial support for unless they're a very large organization with needs that we feel we can realistically meet. And then there are other sorts of technologies which are available as part of DAPA in the universe and multiverse repositories, not enabled by default, but just one checkbox away. And those are things like XGL and K-Drive and other desktop-oriented technologies, which are really interesting, really shiny, but not yet, we believe, at the level of maturity that we can make a substantial official commitment to them for this release.
And there's also the Edubuntu, which is an education-based version of Ubuntu, correct?
Right. So Edubuntu brings together educational applications from both the GNOME and the KDE world into a single desktop. Edubuntu is actually classroom-oriented. So while you can install it on a workstation, while you can install Edubuntu on a workstation, it's designed to be installed in a classroom on a server in a thin client kind of environment. And so with a single install, you can set up a server that will boot thin client images across the network, which have all of the bits that you need for an educational classroom environment.
Does that use parts of the Linux Terminal Server project at all?
Yes, absolutely. Although on the core thing, we've worked with Jim Mack and others, Jim McCullen and others, to kind of pioneer a next-generation approach to thin client. And that stuff started out in Breezy, where we sort of first test drove it. And in DAPA, it's matured substantially. And the advantage that this has over the traditional LTSP approach is that instead of having a big fat binary blob, which is your image that you boot over the network, we actually use a clone of the standard core Ubuntu image, because we've engineered Ubuntu now so that it can boot equally well off a CD or over the network. So what that allows people to do is use the same kernel packages, the same update tools and administrative tools to manage the thin client images that they would have to manage their core OS platform. And that in turn then means that the whole infrastructure can be kept secure more easily, and the cost of ownership, which is really what you care about in a thin client world, can be lower. So I'm pretty confident that the LTSP guys are actually going to adopt that technology for their next release, LTSP 5, I think it is.
Yeah, I remember talking with the LTSP guys, and they said that they were starting to work a little more closely with Ubuntu a little over a year ago,
didn't they? Spoke to Jim.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And that's great.
Yeah, we needed to prove that technology, and I think it's been nice for them having it in Ubuntu and getting sort of tested and kicked around. There's a slightly slower boot time when you do it this way, because you're booting an image, which is a general image, right? It's designed to work equally well off a CD or off a network or off a local hard disk. You can't super optimize it for the thin client case, but you do get then these benefits that the LTSP guys shouldn't be maintaining their own kernel, for example. They shouldn't be maintaining their own X packages, their own desktop environment packages. All of that stuff really should be maintained at a distro level. They want to focus just on the technology to optimize their particular use case.
I mean, Linux has a real big opportunity, especially in the education area. Will Canonical be providing commercial support for Edubuntu as well for school districts?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier. But all of the packages that are part of Edubuntu are part of our commercially supported platform.
So now, you obviously use Ubuntu, right? The main desktop?
I use both Ubuntu and Kubuntu. My desktop computer is Ubuntu computer, and my laptop is Ubuntu.
Ah. So you prefer the KDE environment?
Partly I do that because I want to be confident that I'm up to speed in the sort of the maturing of those two environments. I want to be able to file bugs equally across both of them. And partly because I, you know, enjoy seeing the work that's getting done, and I need to have an appreciation for how the various teams are coming together. And partly because, yeah, I think there's great value in KDE, right? It's a powerful environment that has pioneered certain aspects of the Linux desktop. And I want Ubuntu to be seen, the broader Ubuntu project to be seen, as a place where different free software projects can come and focus their effort to produce, you know, a reference implementation, as it were, of what they do, whether that's Apache, whether that's KDE, whether that's GNOME. The Ubuntu project should be the place that those projects effectively can find that feel that the door is open for them to take that work to the end user. And so, you know, I think Kubuntu is just as important to us as Ubuntu itself.
You know what's important to a desktop Linux project or anything?
What's that?
Games.
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 You slack again. Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's one of the number one questions we get. I get asked about Java, and we're one step closer to having a good Java answer now that Sun has indicated that they're on their way towards a free software license for Java. I get asked a lot about Flash, and I see Macromedia is going to do a Flash 9 for Linux, which is great. But I think they should hurry up and do a free software Flash for Linux before someone else does it for them. And then there are games. And the tricky thing with games is that the APIs that the game developers are writing to are more and more just Microsoft's DirectX. And so that means that in a lot of areas, people have to keep a copy of Windows around to boot into that environment for those APIs. And at this stage, we just don't have a good plan in place for how to emulate that layer at high speed and with high performance under a Linux-based environment.
But we do have SDL and OpenGL, and they seem to be making a lot of progress along the way.
We do have OpenGL. OpenGL has a disadvantage that it tends to lag DirectX because DirectX, you know, Microsoft has a tremendous amount of unilateral decision-making power with DirectX, and at the same time, Microsoft is part of OpenGL. So they're able to, for example, delay the decision-making process in OpenGL by calling for another round of voting or discussions and so on. So I think if we want to see games take off on Linux, then we're going to have to get substantial market penetration for Linux. You know, the one advantage that we do have, perhaps, is that in the gaming market, half of the problem nowadays, or many of the games nowadays, are effectively subscription-oriented. And that's much more friendly towards a free software kind of environment, because what do you want? You want the game itself to be as widely available as possible, so that as many people as possible can trivially test it out, try it out, and become subscribers to your little universe, your massively multiplayer environment. So I think we may see that some game developers start to pick up on Linux as an interesting gaming platform, because its distribution technologies are that much better than those that are available in the proprietary software world.
Right. Yeah, the whole gaming issue is a tough nut to crack. But you had brought up another problem that's been occurring lately, and that's with Macromedia's Flash and their tremendous delay of a new version of Flash for Linux. For how much clout Ubuntu has in the community and you building a business around Ubuntu, have you been able to exert or, you know, any kind of pressure upon Macromedia to speed up their developmental process? Is that avenue there for you to be able to do that?
I just noticed the other day that Macromedia has appointed some guys to start working on a version 9 for Linux, and they're blogging, so there's a public face to that development effort, and we certainly will be in touch with those guys to encourage them to make sure that Ubuntu is one of the target platforms they have. It's interesting, just in the last year or so, I think most of the major guys who are shipping Linux binaries have started targeting Ubuntu. It's got enough of a critical mass out there now that if you're producing desktop-oriented software, it absolutely makes sense to have Ubuntu as one of your targeted, if not your first targeted platform, then certainly one of the targeted platforms that you support. So VMware, for example, all of their sample virtual machines are all based on Ubuntu, and ATI and NVIDIA produce builds of their kernel drivers specifically for Ubuntu. And I've seen Ubuntu packaging for Oracle and all sorts of interesting pieces of proprietary software out there.
Okay. And it's good that we're starting to see that, because Ubuntu is a great project.
Well, thank you very much. And if you have hints, tips, or suggestions, email me or file bugs.
I have one request, Mark.
All right.
Could you get rid of the brown theme that's the default in Ubuntu? It's a little tough on the eyes.
What we're going to do for Dapper is we're racing right now to include another two or three themes that were selected by the community as alternatives. And we're going to continue with the fairly unique color scheme that is part of Ubuntu, but we're also going to make sure that there are some other alternatives in there which are easily accessible. So you can just, you know, go to one other place and get something that's just as distinctive but appeals to a different look and feel. And those will mature and develop starting with Edgy and on through the next couple of releases.
Because some of the community contributions, if you go to the Ubuntu forums, there's a lot of contributions that people have made from the community. Themes, there's the automatic script to add a whole bunch of third-party stuff after the base install, which I've used it myself. I have Ubuntu running on my laptop, and I tried automatics. And what automatics does, it goes out and pulls down some of the close stuff like Acrobat Reader, Flash,
right.
You know, the latest and greatest version of Firefox, whatever. I mean, it's great that people are doing this. And
I think that's part of the exciting thing about working in a community. There's always someone out there who has a new smart idea that you hadn't thought of yet. And one of our goals for Edgy is to identify, you know, the top three or four of those initiatives and work with those community guys to get that stuff into Ubuntu. There's some constraints on what we can do, you know. We can only provide something like automatics for Norwegians, where in Norway it's legal. But we think that we can, you know, for Norwegians out there, we can provide that kind of tool, and we intend to do that in Edgy.
Speaking of Edgy, what are some of the really cool things we have to look forward to? I mean, I've heard little blurbs here and there about it. What are you guys aiming to do with Edgy?
So the one tricky thing with Edgy is that because of the way we're structuring the development process, I can't promise anything because I don't get to say. With the previous releases, it's been quite top down. You know, I've worked with the senior guys, and we've said, all right, here are the 50 to 100 things we want to see in Hori and Breezy and then in Dapper. And so we've driven the development sort of top down. Whereas for Edgy, we're turning it around and saying, okay, guys, each of you picks 5 to 10 things that would be your, you know, hot list for Edgy. And we're letting the developers drive the release, which means that as much as I would like something specific to be in there, I don't get to say. But there are a couple of things that I think are high priority candidates. One of them is Xen, which is virtualization, and to build some sort of generic virtualization capability in so that you could install Ubuntu and then with a single command bring up a new virtual machine or variations on that theme. The other really exciting technology that everybody is interested in is XGL. Although the current tea leaves, just reading the tea leaves right now, I think the Red Hat approach of AIGLX probably has more traction in the community since it's an evolution from the existing code base of X.org. Just in my conversations with the X.org guys, they seem to prefer that evolutionary approach rather than the kind of burn the bridges and jump to an entirely new framework approach of XGL. So, I can't drive and decide on that front. I'm just kind of relaying the bits that I hear from the community. There's also a lot of interest in trying to improve the underlying packaging system in Ubuntu and Debian to be a bit more malleable around multiple architecture support. So the idea being that with an Opteron box, an AMD 64 box, you should actually be able to run both 32-bit and 64-bit applications at the same time. And in fact, you really want that ability because generally, 64-bit applications are much smaller and more compact. 32-bit applications are smaller and more compact. So, for example, on a workstation, you want to have most of your environment be 32-bit, but your database or your high-end rendering application or your high-end graphics application, that becomes 64-bit, so that you can actually create a really optimized, tuned environment. And in order to make that work well, the packaging system needs to be smart enough to know that each library can typically come in both 32-bit and 64-bit versions, and it needs to be able to track the installation and removal of both versions as needed independently. Right now, the packaging system that we use just can't use. So there's some excitement about investing on that front.
Speaking of package management, you know, personally, my experience is trying different Linux distributions is apt-get is the best package manager there is. There is a push to standardize things. Do you think apt-get would be, you know, should be the default package manager?
In terms of the higher level packet management, there's some interest in moving to something called Smart. We on our team we have Gustavo Niemeyer, who is the author of Smart. And Smart is used by a number of distributions across both the Debian and the RPM based world. So Smart is kind of a replacement for apt. It does all the same things that apt does, but it possibly does them, you could say it does them in a cleaner, more elegant kind of way. Apt is a little bit scary if you dig into it, you know, if you pull back a bit. So if we see any major change on that front, it'll probably be towards adopting Smart in AG or AG plus one.
Smart is really good. I have a SUSE box running, and you know, YAS is horrible. It's terribly slow, and I configured Smart, and Smart makes it much easier and much more pleasant experience. It handles dependencies very well, and it's really easy, flexible. You know, the GUI is pretty good, and from the command line, it's even better.
Right. So one of the things that we might do in AG or AG plus one is bring Smart in. And of course then all of the different things like the update notifier, the little thing that gives you the icon in the toolbar when you have updates, as well as the standard package manager, Synaptic and others, those would all have to be updated to talk to Smart.
It's good stuff. Mark, really appreciate everything you've done to the community. If we had 20 more people like you, I think Linux would be much further longer than it is now. You're doing an absolutely fantastic job, and we appreciate it.
You know, my sense is that each month that I spend working with the free software community, it gets more and more professional. And one of the things that I hope to do is in Ubuntu is to create a set of processes and ideas that help the free software community present itself like really, really professionally. There is extraordinary capacity and talent and brilliance in that community. If we can put a professional face on it without taking away its genuine community spirit, we'll do something amazing. We'll produce something that I think Microsoft will have to fundamentally reinvent itself in order to compete with.
Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, give us a couple of years.
They'll innovate their way right into owning Ubuntu one day, right?
Yeah, but you know what? In a couple of years, you're going to have to actually battle Vista because that's probably when they'll release it. So.
All right. Well, lovely to chat to you guys. Thank you for taking the time, and look forward to speaking to you again.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Great job, and you have a
Thanks
good.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Good luck with the release of Dapper.
That break.
In a couple
All
days.
Right.
And thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye.
And that's Mark Shuttleworth.
Yep.
Good interview, man. Good stuff.
Yay.
Good stuff from Ubuntu.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff, of course. That was a good interview, man.
Yeah. And here we are. I just heard the beeping for the...
Alan just jumped to the conference room. No, Dan?
No, not yet. He'll be on in a couple minutes.
At least I hope I jump to the conference room.
I heard the bling, right?
I heard the bling here, but...
I heard the bling. I can. You know what? I'm going to drop off my mic, and I'm going to call in real quick and see, right?
You can try it.
I accept no...
No problem, man. One of the things that we talked a little bit about with Mark was Smart. Smart is a new package management system that was originally developed by Mandriva, and... It works on almost every Linux distro, and it's really good. I've been using it to replace the piece of crap Xen updater on SUSE 10.1. I've been using Smart instead, and it's real nice. I like it a lot. It has an updater that you can put in the system tray, and it goes out. It'll check to see if there's any updates out there. And Mark was kind of alluding that, you know, Ubuntu's looking at it, maybe using it. Now... Well, one of the topics that I was thinking about talking about this week was, does Linux need a universal package management system? I mean, I like apt-get a lot. I think it's fantastic, and it's one of my favorites. You know, one of my favorite package management systems. Pacman is real nice with Arch Linux. Smart is really good, too. You know, they're all good systems. But what do you guys think? Do you think if there was one package management system... Linux would be much further along than where it is now, especially in terms of commercial software development.
It would be good for people who don't want to compile.
Yeah. It would make life a lot easier for a lot of people, I think. And I think it would push adoption little further along there than it is now. What do you think?
Yeah, probably, yeah. I don't hear you over here, Link.
He might not be able to get in. Well, he said he was connecting with his cell phone, right? Want me to try it?
So I can't get into it with my cell phone. I have no idea why.
So, Link, what do you think? Do you think if there was one package management system for all distros, it would be further along, the adoption of Linux? What do you think?
I think it's really hard to say because there are some that have certain advantages for certain reasons. Apt is a really good package manager. However, I understand that the code behind it is old and crusty at this point in time, so that the new smart one is
it's really nice,
a lot better, and
it really
works
is nice.
Similarly,
and works on all the different distros.
However, there's also the BSD package management kind of system.
Is that ports?
Ports, right? That Gentoo like uses
Portage. Sort of.
And that's really good as well under certain circumstances. And then there's also the Slackware version of doing things, which, and Slackware does have a package manager.
Yeah, but it's so primitive compared to everything
else. But it's that way for a reason. It's not really primitive. It's fully functional.
Yes, it is.
And it works great, but there's, you know, there's a reason behind it. The reason that they have that kind of package management is because of the way they built Slackware. You know what I mean?
But Slackware is not something you would give to your grandma.
Hell yes, I would. I would give it to her configured and ready to go, and she'd never have to touch it again. You know what I mean? Just like any other Linux that I would give to somebody, I would make sure
I haven't run Slackware in a while. Can you run Linux packages through a GUI? I'm sure you can now.
You mean like download packages,
yeah,
and stuff like that?
Yeah, like, you know.
Honestly, I don't have a freaking clue.
There probably is one.
I really don't know.
The thing about Linux packages and Slackware packages in general is there's not a ton of them out there. There's a lot less than the Debian or Ubuntu world. You know, there's so much more with those distros.
Well, yeah, I guess there are. But
it's a ton of them. There's like thousands, man.
It's a different ball of wax, you know, between the two. Like Slackware, if you have Slackware and you're running Slackware and you want a package that you can't find, you can just download it and, you know, pretty much type configure make install and it's there.
And check install is a nice little application too to get rid of stuff cleanly.
If you were to do that under Debian, you would get a broken package because Debian and every other version of Linux outside of Linux from scratch uses a lot of patches for their software. I don't know why.
Yeah, I can't get into that.
Yeah, you can't use the packages from one to the other.
I don't know why they would do that, but you know, a lot of them do. They patch it for different ways of doing things, I guess.
Yeah, smart is definitely a project to keep an eye on. I think you're going to hear more and more things about it in the future.
You know, I think it would be a good idea. I think it's smart. I haven't tried smart yet, right? But I think if it runs simply, like apt-get...
You can run it from the command line. Like, you do smart update, like mm-hmm. apt-get update, mm-hmm. and you do smart search, whatever mm-hmm. the package name, or description of the package.
Right.
And then smart install package name,
mm-hmm.
smart upgrade, smart remove.
It sounds like a
it's
good idea.
It's very simple.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea.
And it has a pretty GUI that you can use, too.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the way to go then.
And it also has an automatic.
It definitely make things nicer.
It has an update utility that just sits in the tray and sits there. The machine's up all the time.
Right.
It'll go down and pull down, you know, updates as they come up.
Yeah. Sounds good to me, man.
Check it out, man.
I think that's the stuff to do. But you know, is it available on? I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Is it available on Ubuntu? Probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it runs on SUSE, Ubuntu, and some people saying it can run on Slackware even.
Probably, but you have to point it at a repository.
Probably, yeah. You got to point it to the right repository.
Which, you know, that's something, packages. That's something that, you know, you're right. That's something Slackware is lacking. We should have a better...
Don't get me wrong, man. Slackware is a solid distribution, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing with Slackware. Once you... If you can concede to spending an extra hour after you have it installed, putting the stuff on it that you intend to use... You're done. That's it. It'll run. Period. You know?
The problem,
it'll
run,
it'll run fast. It'll do what you want.
Dan talked about Slackware getting something that's really complicated and has a shitload of dependencies.
Right.
On Slackware, it could be a chore to get it going.
Yep, it can. For sure. But, you know, there's
but it's a challenge.
It can also be a chore.
Yeah, it's a challenge if you got 30 hours to kill.
Not really, because it can also be a chore trying to get it.
He tried getting iFolder going. That's a freaking immense freaking package. Mm-hmm. And dependencies, man. That's a freaking monster.
But here's the thing. If you have a monster package that you're trying to get going on another distribution, let's say, you know, SUSE or Red Hat or something like that, and it doesn't work properly, you can run into a lot more problems that way than you could if you were trying
packages?
To get it running under Slackware. Slackware uses native unpatched code, unpatched libraries and stuff like that. The other distributions do not.
Packages are as strong as the package maintainer coded it. That's the bottom line.
I would hear a ding there. So.
Yeah. I heard a ding. Is that Dan? Hello?
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 Hey, Dan.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Well,
yeah,
everybody except Pat, right?
What? I can hear him.
Yeah, Pat sounds like he's, I don't know, choking on something over there and then talking through some pain.
I got your microphone right here, Dan.
Yeah, that must be it.
Better.
So you called...
Did you guys talk about Picasa at all tonight?
No, we didn't, actually.
We're waiting for you.
We're waiting for you, man.
Oh, you're waiting for me to talk about Picasa.
25 minutes. Wait. It's all you, Dan.
Oh, man. Hey, I'm sitting outside of 7-Eleven. Because the wife's going in and got me some 40s.
How ghetto.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you didn't leave any in your fridge.
Yeah, seriously, man.
What's that?
You didn't leave any for us in the fridge, man.
You took the beer out of my fridge?
No, we figured we'd come here and open the fridge and there'd be like Slurpees waiting for us, dude. There's nothing.
There's a beer in there.
I don't know.
She got a 40 of Steel Reserve. I don't know what the heck that is. And a 40 of Boone's Farm.
Ooh. Oh, Boone's Farm. That's what you want, man. Yeah. That's the good stuff.
How could you ask for more, man? She's driving me around. She stuffed me full of seafood. And got me some 40s.
40 of Boone's Farm. Man, I don't think I've had Boone's Farm since I was like 18.
You would know, yeah.
18 and trying to get laid, but that's besides the point.
Well, you can have a couple of those beers and try and get laid up there in the office while I'm not there.
Now pass.
Dan's going to find a condom underneath the desk.
He just pours some milk and a rubber and lay it on his chair for when he gets back.
It smells like salad.
A Coney Island whitefish.
It's disgusting, man.
Yeah, I'm on the show. Oh, my God. You know what? I should actually roll down the window and hold the phone out the window there, and it sounds like we're on the Linux show then.
Oh, man. You got to be doing 50 down the highway.
Yeah. Did any of you guys besides Pat try out Picasa?
I did.
What'd you think?
It was all right. I mean, I wasn't real awful impressed with it, but it ran all right. I mean, you know, it's just not my bag, I guess.
I wasn't that impressed by it. I mean, Digicam and FSpot are good enough for me, man.
I'm good with, like, you know, Info.
My impression of Picasa was, I was, you know, when it's all said and done, I was kind of disappointed at the overall production of it. While I found it a comparable and definitely a fairly decent photo management and editing utility, I didn't think it was any better than any of the other tools under Linux.
Agreed.
Yep, that's my impression too. You know, I am appreciative though that it was ported to Linux, and that work.
It wasn't really ported.
Well, no, but they did some real.
They did
supposedly
some code
Google work. Supposedly Google Earth is the next one.
Yeah, they did improvements to Wine.
I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for that one.
Which is good.
Some
code
that's work
good
to Wine, and that's something that I can appreciate, and I think that's a good idea. However, like some other people, I'm under the impression that, you know, they've made some good money off the Linux community, and maybe it would be nice if they did a native application.
Absolutely. Maybe this is a stepping stone for them. Maybe
it could be.
Maybe
they're
putting feelers out to see what kind of response they got.
Sure. You know, I'm appreciative that they actually did something, much unlike a lot of the other companies.
Well, we're gonna have Chris DeBon on. We can bring it up with him because he's a Google employee.
Yeah.
I don't know what his capacity is over there, what he's doing, but we'll definitely bring it up with him.
We'll make sure he gets fired after our interview, huh?
Now, you guys, I'm assuming you both ran it under Ubuntu, right?
I did, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, I ran it under Arch. I used the Loki installer, the Tarball.
How was it?
Loki installer. And, you know what, it installed without a problem. I put it in my home directory. But what problem I did have with it is the first thing I tried doing is I pointed it to all my my current album photos that I manage with FSpot. I pointed it to there, had no problem picking up the photos in there. And the first thing I wanted to do was export out a video of all my photos that I wanted to just try it out. Yeah. And for the life of me, I could not find where it let the export of the video file. I mean, when it was finished, it brought up this this cryptic window file manager almost. It was almost like Windows Explorer-ish. And it gave me an error message of say, you know, go in and edit this default template script so that it brings up your file manager of choice, which I later did and told it to do Conker, but it still didn't work right. So it took me a while to really realize it put the output file, the AVI file that it created, into a directory under my home directory called, what was it, Picasa Documents?
Right.
Did you guys get that too?
I did get that, and the one thing that I noticed with that is if you delete that directory, it like stops working. You can't make you can't make videos anymore. You can't do any shit anymore.
Comes a grinding halt.
Yeah, it just dies. That's
so
one of the
I
bugs
thought
that I
was
noticed.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an ugly kludge.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anywhere in my cursory view of the Picasa documentation. Hold on. You might want to... I didn't roll up the window. I didn't see anywhere in the Picasa documentation that indicated that was going to be the case. And I didn't see anything in the template file that would tell me, you know, what I actually needed to direct my file manager to.
Right.
Other than just putting, like, Conqueror in there and it would fire Conqueror up. And just sit there and stare at me stupidly.
Right.
And, you know, that I also took a look at the screensaver. Did you guys try that out?
I couldn't get that to work, actually. I didn't spend a whole lot of time,
no. No, same here. All I know is it brought up X screensaver demo for me for some reason. And I'm like, well, what the hell is it doing? I have no clue. I wasn't too happy that the MP3... soundtrack to the video file was not functioning. I figured, you know, if they spent all this time trying to port this over, at least they could have had that working.
Uh-huh.
If they weren't going to do a native version under Linux, they were just going to do a Wine version. I mean, I'm okay with the Wine. I know a lot of people complain that it does not integrate well with any window manager at all.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own kind of style, and you know, my opinion is integration is fine, and, you know, if it looks a little different, but it functions for what I want it to, you know, that's fine with me. But, you know, I'm glad to see it under Linux, but it's just, I think as a first attempt, or actually the first out of the gate, it wasn't awe-inspiring, and it wasn't like a wow or a, hey, great job type thing. It almost felt like an afterthought.
Sure, yep. Yeah, but I'm thinking that the big contribution there is going to be in the Wine code itself and not the application, you know. Like the application is something right. that they could get to run under their contributions to wine. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big wine fan because pretty much I think at this point in time, you should be able to find an application that's written natively for Linux that does what you want to do instead of trying to run something that was written for Windows. But I can understand that some people do want to use wine for different things. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, they went through a little bit of trouble to better the port.
Hopefully they come out with a native port, Linux native port, hopefully.
That'd be nice.
That integrates nicely with GNOME and KDE.
I'm not against wine. I'm always amazed when something actually works right under it.
And, Notepad you know, works great under
Lotus Mac. Notes actually works, man.
Picasso works right under wine, and I'll give him that. Google Earth does not work that great under wine. I don't know if you guys ever tried doing that.
No.
Nope.
But that's the first thing I tried doing right after I got Picasa. I saw that, hey, Google Earth supposedly works under wine. It's a pain in the ass to get working.
Now, it's a self-contained wine package. It's really a big-ass file, isn't it? It's like, what, 30 meg or something like that?
Good size.
It was really big. I hope they're not planning on doing that for every application because you're going to wind up with freaking... You know, a folder full of 30 meg applications.
Wow. Hey, you should see the size of this cockroach in our hotel room.
Staying in a Roach Motel?
You're down south. You get the real big palmetto bugs.
Palmetto bugs? Cockroaches with wings?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get rid of it. Hold on. They don't bite.
Yeah, that's what just keep saying
they don't die either, Dan. Trust me.
You chop the head off, it keeps moving.
That place we had in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, man, we used to get these ones that were like 2 inches long.
What you need to do, Dan, is you need to find three more, and you super glue them to the bottom of your chair legs, and then you go out in the parking lot
wheelchair.
With it. Yeah, you go out in the parking lot with it and take them for a ride, you know?
Yeah. They're pretty neat looking. They're not as big as the cockroaches I saw in Mexico, man. Those things are about the size of your hand. But, you know, thank you, Google, for Picasa. But, you know, thank you more for Digicam and F-Spot and GNOME. Using those.
Yeah, buddy.
So how do you liking life down in Virginia, Dan? You think you can get used to it?
I don't know, man. There's a Sonic, and then 2 miles away from a Sonic is a Crab Shack, and then across the bridge is another Sonic. What else could you ask for?
You're in heaven right now,
two
right?
Two Sonics, a Crab Shack, and big-ass cockroaches.
Trailer parks.
What more could you want, huh?
Yeah, I bet there are some trailer parks.
I bet your wife was really digging that big cockroach, too, huh?
Nah, she didn't like that at all. I had to get rid of it.
Get a bunch of them and you can make them fight. Build a little ring.
Get it painted. If you're home with another kid.
If you're missing your dog, you know, you just throw a collar around him and you're good.
Yeah. A pet.
And they don't bounce around.
So what else we got tonight? Anything? Dan, we talked about upgrading with Ubuntu. I did my upgrade. It went pretty well for the most part. Just a few little minor annoyances here and there.
Damn.
Yeah, I just ran a dist upgrade on my system about 2 hours ago. So on my EPC version. And, you know, so far I have not really had much of a problem with Dapper Drake.
Did you have KDE installed?
No, I don't have KDE installed. I have, I think, just GNOME and XFCE and Fluxbox. I haven't seen my wife, which, you know, I should probably get on doing that before Mad Rush.
Yeah, because I'm interested to know. I updated mine, and when I had KDE on it. It's regular Ubuntu installed, but I had KDE on it. After my upgrade, when it rebooted, it had the Kubuntu splash screen, while it was rebooting, which I thought, you know, was a little odd. And Pat says that his did not. So I'm interested to know if anybody else has done it and what theirs did.
When I originally did my upgrade, Dapper, about, what was it, 4 or 5 weeks ago, when I was doing the beta stuff, I had a problem with the GDM, the GNOME Desktop Manager. Uh-huh. Whenever I tried to log into any one of my, any window manager, it would bomb out on me and only give me, like, the default fail-safe terminal.
You can hear them 40s clanging in the background, can't you?
Yeah. I'm pulling one out now. Dude, we were driving down the road today after the airport. There was a guy. This is like a pickup truck driving past us. The guys in the back seat are all sitting there chugging down on Budweiser. And they were happy, hanging out the window singing Jimmy Buffett songs.
How can you be happy chugging Budweiser?
Singing Jimmy Buffett. Or just singing Jimmy Buffett.
Hey, you know what? You gotta give him credit, huh? Way to go.
As long as you're happy.
I forget what I had to do to fix the problem with regards to the issue with the GDM, but once I cleared it up, I still left it at what I consider run level 3, which Debian and Ubuntu don't, which is without GDM.
Uh-huh.
And since then, it's worked fine.
He is anti-GDM. No GDM for Dan.
So Dan, those old laptops, man. What do you recommend? What kind of Linux to put on there? What do you think? Debian with maybe XFCE or Slackintosh?
On what?
Those old laptops.
Those you have there, I would try Slackintosh or Debian, if anything.
Now that they have 64 meg of RAM, I'm sure we can upgrade that. You need to get specific RAM, right?
Yeah, I mean, those systems right there, although they run fine, I mean, they're good. Oh, gosh, 5, 6 years old, I think. They predate OS X.
Yeah, one had OS 8 on it.
They all do.
OS 8.
So it's, you know, if you guys want them, take them. If not, oh, and don't forget the books over there, too.
Oh, yeah.
You want any of those books?
You're really serious about moving because you cleared out the house right by the door, man.
Oh, just by the door.
Yeah, you should see the back porch.
Dude. When I called up, I was talking to your wife, and she was telling me you guys overhauled your basement and didn't notice the difference.
There's a whole lot of crap out in the back porch. But, you know what, I forget two things. With the Mark Shuttleworth interview, and I really apologize to Mark for this, I forgot to say that my wife wanted me to say, you know, thank you for such a wonderful distribution, because she uses it all the time and loves it.
I think I thanked them.
And she also wanted me to ask Alan if he missed the dog peeing on her today.
What's that?
The dog dry humping you.
Oh, yeah, I do miss the dog, you know, thankfully.
And was it me, or did we say something that might have ticked off of Mark at the end of the interview?
He completely, like, dropped off at the end, but I think he had to just go. I don't think he was mad at anything, per se. Is Link, what were you saying at the end?
I said if you release it in a couple of years, then you'll have to battle Vista, because that's when Vista will finally come out.
Yeah, I don't think he was pissed at that. I don't think
anybody got that but me. So.
I think he had to just drop off because he was busy.
Yep. Plus, it sounded like he had a good cold going on, too. You know, he kept, like, coughing and stuff during the interview, so hopefully he feels a little bit better now. Should have fixed him up over there with a hot toddy, you know?
One question I forgot to ask him, how much did he actually pay to go up into space with the Russians?
It's like $20 million.
$20 million?
Like $20 million.
Hey, we'll just have
that was the advertised price, $20 million.
I think it was probably a little less than that in reality.
Well, once you start coughing up that much money, you know.
Yeah. 19, 20 million.
15, 20, what the fuck?
I got to actually get going. My phone bill is going to go up through the roof after this.
We should have called you, man.
He's on a cell phone.
What's that?
Wouldn't make a difference.
That's true. You're on a cell phone. There was some issues with Broadvoice today, Dan. For some reason, we couldn't call in with through a landline. And it wasn't just us. Link was having the same problem with his Astro server as well. And I called them up and I put a trouble ticket in, but I don't think it was the problem was with them. And I also got my my SIP phone to work too.
Yeah, this problem's with Broadvoice, I think.
I don't know, man.
I don't think it was Broadvoice today. I think it was somebody else.
I had no problems at all today getting into the conference.
Cool.
All righty, man.
All right, Dan, well, we're going to let you drop off. Tell your wife we said hello. Hope everything goes the way you guys wanted to with your little interview thingy tomorrow. And we expect to get emails knowing, so make sure we get updates.
All right, man.
Talk in a bit.
Enjoy the rest of your night.
Enjoy.
Take it easy.
Have a good one. Enjoy your 40s.
40s. 40s. 40s.
40s in the 7-Eleven.
And...
All right. And I want to thank everybody out there for the hate mail.
Yes.
For what? What hate mail?
All the hate mail we get about, our crappy audio qualities and stuff.
It's all Dan's fault.
You get the giant flaming bite me, by the way, if you're interested in writing hate mail to me or to the tech show, by all means, go ahead if it makes you feel better, but I really don't give a shit. I just want you to know that. Like, if you're going to write in here and tell me the audio sucks again, because the audio sucks and you guys really should work on your podcast a little bit more,
You're
stupid. It's not a podcast. Podcasted afterwards because it's a convenient method for us to distribute it, but, it's really a live broadcast and you're a freaking idiot.
And we don't have a problem if someone wants to give us $10,000 to upgrade our equipment and our line to a T3.
I don't even think we need $10,000. I think we could do it for a lot cheaper. So if you guys want to, I'll put some money.
They want to give us $10,000. We'll take it.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure. $10,000? I can make sure that I take the day off every Wednesday. we can really work on it then. But anyway, listen, guys.
No, you need to take the day off Thursday. So after you have this,
right? Right. So we can Wednesday night afterwards, we can all sit around together.
If we actually started like Wednesday afternoon, we did some test runs Wednesday afternoon, did the show Wednesday night into Thursday, then we'd need the $10,000, but and then you'd get really good audio.
Sure.
On it, because at that point you've got somebody professional doing it for us.
And then maybe we could get some sponsors, and then we could, work on content for the show Monday through, Tuesday.
Seriously.
Friday through Tuesday, and then, that would be good too, and then I wouldn't have to go to my slave labor camp 5 days a week. My slave labor camp with the users that...
Stalag 12?
Yeah, Stalag 14 with users that can't freaking double-click a mouse.
anyway. I got to get going, guys. I'll talk
Good
to
night.
You later.
All right, see you, Dan.
Take it easy.
All right, everybody, and this just about concludes Tech Show episode 142. And what I'm going to do... is right now I'll play us out with the latest song, one of the latest songs from Jonathan Colton called Famous Blue Raincoat. I hope it's good, because
we haven't heard it yet.
Haven't listened to it at all, and here it is. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
It's 4 in the morning, the end of December. I'm writing you now just to see if you're better. New York is cold, but I like where I'm living. There's music on Clinton Street all through the evening. I hear that you're building your little house deep in the desert. You're living for nothing now. I hope you're keeping some kind of record. Yes, and Jane came by with a lock of your hair. She said that you gave it to her. that night when you plan to go clear. Did you ever go clear? The last time we saw you, you looked so much older. Your famous blue raincoat was torn at the shoulder. You'd been to the station to meet every train. You came home without Lily Marlene, and you treated my woman to a flake of your life. When she came back, she was nobody's wife. And I see you there with a rose in your teeth. Thin gypsy thief. Will I see Jane's awake? She sends her regards. What can I tell you, my brother, my killer? What can I possibly say? I guess that I miss you. I guess I forgive you. I'm glad that you stood in my way. If you ever come by here, for Jane or for me, will your enemy sleep? This woman is free, yes, and thanks for the trouble you took from her eyes. I thought it was there for good, so I never tried. That you gave it to her that night when you planned to go clear. Sincerely, El Cohen.
Let me hit that record now.
Are we going to do a backup
recording? 142. Well, I was going to do that, but I haven't had a chance yet. So,
well,
yeah, like anybody wants to.
I brought my iAudio. Alan, you brought your iRiver.
I was going to grab it through StreamRipper, you know, at the house.
Well, this will come out better, though, because if we get a line up from the compressor.
Bite your tongue. Come out better. Listen to that shit, huh? This will come out better. No.
Let's see.
You know
off the compressor or through the stream, or it's like 24. What do we stream at? 24?
Multimedia. Do you think XMMS is in there? Shit, no. Would be most helpful if KDE would just default to playing stuff with XMMS like it should.
Now, that would be too simple.
Hook. Yeah. There we go. That's good. Let that play. We're gonna see what the quality is going through the line.
You're going to hear to record some stuff and check it out. Who sounds like?
Yes.
Woohoo!
The backup.
And playful banter. Free software.
Free software.
Free speech. Open source. Open mic.
Open mic.
Live.
Live. Sunday.
Live. Here are your hosts, Dan.
Live.
Let me see how this is.
I hear it. Live, 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 live. Someday.
Monster
That's
truck.
Funny shit, man.
Bigfoot.
Okay, I'm just gonna settings. KDE settings. File associations. Yes, we do want to do that. MP3. MP3, and I want to add XMMS user bin XMMS. Okay. Updating system configuration. Alright, and we want to take this other shit and make sure that we don't use that at all.
It's really loud.
Is it really loud?
You may have to turn it.
Turn your input gain down a little bit.
All right, I'm going to lower it.
Hey, Pat, lower it.
Shit. Oh, Pat, yeah. Let's bring it down to save five.
Live, live! From Studio B. It's Alan, Pat, and Link.
The Linux Link Tech Show.
Yeah, they're all on the IRC. You guys go, man. They're all saying, hey, everybody that can record the stream should record the stream.
Just in case.
You're not shit. You should do that anyway. You know, just because you guys are our dedicated listeners and such good sports about our issues that we have here, you know?
Issues? What issues?
Issues.
All right, I lowered the gain and see how the quality is now.
You want us just talking to the mic.
Talking to the mic.
Blah, blah, blah. Something, something, words, something, something, something.
Where's that coming out of? Is this coming out of the compressor? Or?
No, that's coming right out of the
board. That's why it's so hot.
Something.
And we can't turn it down because you're going to turn it down on the stream.
That's okay.
Live. I can feel the sweat like rolling down the side of my back already in here.
Oh, God, I know. It's like so fucking hot.
This is not cool. It is live, though. So, you know. Oh, they're gonna bitch. Did you hear that? I'm beeping. Shit. What is that? Set term?
It's still really hot.
X set minus B. Will that keep me from beeping, guys? What the fuck is that noise? Is that you fucking around over there? Making it hum like that?
Wah. No, you're
good. Yeah. No. That was an audio hum, dude.
Oh, not me.
It was zinging. I'll tell you what, dude. Really impressive, right? You remember how when we first started the show, I used to do all the sound effects, right? And I used to do them from my Dell laptop, and we used to have that faint background hum going on, just a little bit, and. Could never get it fully to go away. I guess it was just like a driver thing or whatever, right? But I'm jacked in, and it's not the first time I've done it, right? I'm jacked in now to my ThinkPad, my new old ThinkPad, and absolutely perfect. It's nice and quiet and stuff. The only thing I have not tried is actually recording on it yet, but I'm betting that since the ThinkPad is so well supported
under
Linux.
You love that ThinkPad.
Oh, it's awesome, man. I'm betting since it's so well supported under Linux that that it would do the right thing recording it too. You know what I mean? It would be the shit. I mean, it is the shit, but it would be the shit, right?
Surgery. Sounds like crap.
They're bitching already about the fucking beeper. It's always Link, they say. Yeah, it is. It is. It's always me. It's because, like, I'm the only one, right? I'm the only one that has to do any freaking programming or any shit during the middle of the freaking show. I'm the only one that has to answer the damn emails during the middle of the freaking show. So it beeps at me.
Sounds horrible, man.
Bastards. What sounds horrible?
Well,
the line in going in this thing.
Does it really?
Make sure you're not doing a mic in. Make sure you're doing a line in. Because that's a line level out.
Something, something.
No,
all right, listen, guys. I gotta download that. Shit, 10 minutes. Can I even get it? Didn't he say he saved it? Oh, but I can't get it out.
You got the interview for
no, that's what I'm trying to get now. Yeah,
it's on the server. Sent an email.
Excuse me. Yeah, I know it's on the server, but where on the server is it? Aha. Wow, I hope it's not monster huge because, yeah, buddy, we're downloading it on the Lappy Toppy. And we only got 9 minutes. Live, live. Link it up. We had information. Information.
Beep, 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 beep.
What is this? Okay. No, 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 no. Well, we're streaming, right? Yeah, you guys over there?
They can hear us.
Listening on the stream. I know they can hear us. You guys listening on the stream, I just want to know, well, actually... That would be pretty fucking dumb, wouldn't it?
What's that?
I'm talking about you guys listening on the stream. If you can hear us, let me know what you know what server you're connected to. But like if they can't hear the stream,
you're only
I probably
on.
Should ask in the chat, right?
But if you can't hear us, you won't be able to help us.
That's a problem, then, right?
There we go. Dan's in what, Virginia? Or, yeah, Virginia, right?
Virginia,
yeah,
Virginia
Beach.
Virginia, yeah.
Sounds better.
Be still, my beating heart.
Sounds better.
Yeah, when you switch it over to line. Yeah.
Much better. Good. Like you
almost
know,
there.
In a pinch, we could actually use it as a
yes.
recording. That's a good thing. Hey, the new. Did anybody listen to the new Jonathan Colton song?
No, not yet.
Which one?
Well, he released the edited version of Code Monkey, but the other one I'm talking about.
What was the edit on it?
He took out the swear words.
Oh, I didn't even realize there was any in it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me see if we got this interview going on here.
Do the introductions,
sure.
Pat.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Mark Sherwood.
There it is. Boys and girls.
Woohoo!
apparently the interview will play. Yeah, because I wanted to do the maybe the Jonathan Colton, the new song, but I haven't heard it yet, so I don't know if it's like really good in which played or what.
I had to fiddle with the levels. At 3, it sounded pretty good, but it was still a little hot sometimes. 1 was too low, so...
Yeah, leave it on 2 then.
Yeah, well, I'm trying 2 right now, so...
Leave it on 2. We'll only get louder and...
Yes, more boisterous as we start throwing things and getting drunk.
Yes. Speaking of drunk, man, you didn't bring any beer or anything this time, did you? Shit. Right when I was counting on him.
You're not a beer drinker.
Yeah, but I'm fucking hot. It's hot.
You're hot.
Shit. Well, yeah, I know I'm hot, but don't go telling everybody your fantasies over their freaking internet.
You're hot.
Yeah, baby. Okay. Famous blue raincoat. That's one. And nobody listened to it yet, right?
No.
Shit.
I keep forgetting to subscribe to his Song of the Week podcast.
We could all listen to it together. The problem is, where the hell do you download the damn thing?
How's my volume on the mic? Should I come down a little bit? I'm on Dan's. I think it sounds a little hot when I talk on this.
Yeah, you are a little loud.
Bring it down a little bit, please. Thank you.
Where the hell is the download link? You know, the guy is a cool guy, but he really has to fix his freaking website.
All right, I'm going to fire this up. Who's that alone? And we're off and running. So I set the sweet spot for like 2.
Yeah, that'll work.
Somewhere near, as long as we have something, you know? As long as we have something.
So we're all good to go here?
Be a good thing.
Connecting to the stream.
It looks like we're recording. We're connected to our stream. We still have to connect to BinRev and Manager
Show. Fire it
up. And see if we can connect it at the appropriate time. 8:30, right? That's when we connect to BinRev.
It's 8:28 now.
You could jump in a minute early. It's not the end of the world.
No, I don't think it'll let you. That's the thing. That's the thing. All right, NTP date. Just to make sure, right? NTP date. tick.usno.navy.mil. Or you can use talk.usno.navy.mil. And that will update you to the current time on the East Coast, if you happen to be wondering how it is.
So are you recording anywhere else besides up there or no?
That's it, buddy.
And this. Okay.
What was your NTP one?
Tick or talk.
Was it
like T-I-C-K,
right?
Or you can use T-O-C-K, .USNO, .Navy, .MIL.
No, wait, I totally screwed up on that one. Start over for the slow people in the audience.
NTP date.
Yeah, I got this.
Space.
Start date, 23.5.
Yep. Tick, T-I-C-K, .USNO, .Navy, .MIL.
Okay, I started typing there. Well, it just all went to hell.
Well, you can use talk, too. Talk will work as well.
Yeah, talk it, actually.
And that should, you know, that should get your stuff. Okay.
8:30
it is. Let's see if we can get a connection here. Oh, my goodness!
We're in?
We're on the first freaking try. Oh,
what man. About the other mirrors, no?
I don't know about them. All we got up here to connect to.
I think they automatically connect,
so. We're, man, this is the stuff. Look at this.
Link is feeling good about himself sitting in the command chair there.
I'm rubbing it, man. That's it. Okay, everybody, this is it. We're going to start it off. You ready? Everybody shut the hell up.
Fire it up, man.